Welcome to Hot Breath Comedy Fam. On Monday, May 13th, I am teaching a clean comedy workshop. The last four I have taught sold out very quickly. So if you want to learn about clean comedy, the business side, where the line is, how to write clean comedy, go to the link in the description of this episode and we'll see you there.
And I was watching it. I was like, who is this guy and how is he so comfortable?
Comfortable on stage. Yeah, I get that a lot. Man, it's just like this is our job training. You know, you got to hit the open mics. You got to hit the stages, you know, different nights, man. You know, and just work on your craft, man. You know, that's the only way you're going to be able to advance. Just like your job, man, you got to continue to work, you know, build a relationship with the crowd and just continue to polish your set, man. You know, and it just panned out for me.
Hot breath.
You'll be on the couch. This is like late night.
All right, so I'm sitting right here?
You'll be on the couch, yes, sir.
Okay. Woo-hoo-hoo, got Joe Bias show, baby.
This is it right here.
Is this the hot breath?
This is hot breath.
Oh, bro, yeah, finally got on hot breath.
You got your water, too, man. That's your hot breath water.
That's dope, man. That's dope, Joe. That's cool,
dude. No, it's cool that you're on this.
Yeah, man. That's what's up, man.
Let me give you a proper intro.
Okay.
Hot Breathiverse. Welcome back to another Hot Breathisode here. This is Hot Breath Podcast, your weekly guide to comedy mastery. I am your host, comedian Joel Byers, and today we have a master, but he wasn't always a master. He paid his dues. This is what we call in the comedy game a triple OG.
Right.
Started comedy back in 1995, Uptown Comedy Corner right here in Atlanta. Got a standing ovation his first time.
Wow. Yep,
ever since, has been on Comedy Central, Kevin Hart special, HBO. Also played golf with a little guy named Barack Obama. But in the meantime, this guy has been on the grind, staying in rooms with Mike Epps that their manager found. Being out at open mics and seeing Steve Harvey and D.L. Hughley and Said the Entertainer. This guy is a master of this craft who, like he just ended his show with, he's next. And that's why he's on here, because we believe it as well. So if you do enjoy this episode, be sure to just reach out to him on social media. Let him know it was very valuable. Be sure to connect with us, subscribe to this, support us, share this with other comics. And that being said, JJ from The Sip, welcome to the Hot Breathiverse, my man.
Finally. And Joe, man, I got to give you your props, man. You did your homework.
Already.
Man, you knew that when my first time was.
Yeah, man.
You knew me and Mike Epps shared an apartment together. Yeah, you know, yeah. In the living room, actually.
It was a living room?
It was a living room. It what? Wasn't an apartment, man. We were staying with a guy that was managing us at the time. Early in my career.
Uh-huh.
And we lived together in New York, man. And we grind together and everything, man. So yeah, so you really did your homework, man. This that dude right
Yo,
here for
hey,
real.
You're worth it, man.
I appreciate
how
it.
How did
man.
How long into your career was that you stand in the
staying in New York? I started in 95, man, so maybe about 99.
Okay.
1999 I moved to New York for a couple of months. We had this guy that was in working with us and everything. This was way before Mike. People even knew who Mike Epps was
right.
And everything, man. So we did a lot of grinding together, man.
What is that grind, man? What conversations are you having with Mike Epps? You're 4 years in. You guys are sharing a living room.
Well, you know, Mike started before me, man. So he gave me a lot of pointers about, you know, hustling and hitting different spots, working on your craft, getting out of the South and trying your jokes out in different regions. Because you don't want to be a regional comic. You want to be able to entertain and appeal to everybody across the world and everything. So he was like, man, move to New York. You know, this is where a real big grind is, man. You know, it's a lot of work up here, man. You do two or three shows in a night.
Yeah.
You know, you may not make but a total of 125 or 130, but it's going to help you polish your show, help you polish your stage time, give you a lot of great stage presence and everything, man. So Mike Epps taught me a lot early in my career.
How did you connect with him so early on?
Early on, man, you know, me doing stand-up, man, you know, I had a nice little buzz about my show and everything, man. So word had spread it And you know, we bumped into each other at a comedy night, the 559.
Oh, an ATL also.
Yeah, is legendary that Bruce? Bruce. Ooh. And that was one of the toughest crowds ever.
You make it,
and the headliner ain't got to do but 5 minutes. That's just how tough it was. You know, if you get the crowd for 5 minutes, man, that's an hour special. Mm-hmm. Because they tension span is so limited and everything, man. So you damn near got to start with your punchline.
Right.
Then go back and tell you how you set up that and everything. So that was a great moment, man. And then I moved to New York. Like I said, man, we just started doing a lot of different grinds together, man. So he helped me polish my game a lot.
And you also got to see people early on at, I think, the Vuku Lounge?
Vuku Ray. So that happened, man. I was at school, Alcorn State University in Lawrence, Mississippi.
On a trumpet scholarship, by the way.
Did your homework, boy! Yeah, that paid for my college tuition, mm-hmm. but I just needed a break. So I stopped school for a while, moved to Dallas, Texas, and started working at Sears, man, in the dispatch, in the automotive department. Staying with my brother and everything, man. They used to have this spot called Vuku Ray that Steve Harvey hosted back in the day, man. So, I mean, this is before I even thought about being stand-up comedy, man, doing stand-up comedy. So I saw a lot of legends at Vuku Ray's, from Steve Harvey to Sid to T.K. Kirkland to Lenny from Good Times, D.L. Hughley. You know, just a lot of legendary comedians, man. And, you know, the bulb just went off. Like, man, that's what I want to do. I think this is my calling and everything. Mm-hmm. So lived in Dallas for a while, man, going to watch Steve Harvey destroy people and crowds. Really? I'm talking about, like I said, and this before, I mean, he had a name, but he wasn't where he is now.
Right.
And everything, man. So that was a great opportunity to go out and just check out different comedians that we all love today and appreciate and everything.
That's what you hear in this game is, like, in the old days, you hear, like, Earthquake at Uptown. Like,
right.
Just, they're almost like the foundations
yes.
are cracking. They're
yes.
Making people laugh
yeah,
so
absolutely,
hard.
Absolutely. So once I started doing stand-up, man, I did Uptown. My very first night, Corey Zumiller was the very first person that ever
We're trying to get him on here. He's elusive. We're going to get him on
here,
though.
Zumiller, good brother.
Yeah.
That's the very first person that ever brought me on stage.
Uh-huh.
And I'm going to tell you a story. Like, my very first night, I did open mic night, Pat, Tuesday night, Uptown, the old Uptown that was in
Mic,
Uptown Comedy Corner that was in Buckhead. Right behind Houston's upstairs in that little plaza.
The OG
Uptown, man. It was a Tuesday night, you know, packed. They had legendary comics in the audience at the time because they did open mic. Then they brought the big names up. So you had DC Curry in the audience. You had Chris Charles. You had Earthquake. You had Zoo Man, Chocolate. Arnaz J was in the audience. Chris Tucker was in the audience. So they do open mic. And, man, everybody was bombing. Everybody was bombing. I was kind of like last on the list and everything, man. And so Zoo Man, he was like, man, I'm going to do one more open mic and then we're going to go to the headline. I mean, to the pros, and the crowd was going crazy. But the next open mic wasn't me. Oh. It was somebody before me. So I was getting ready to get bumped. So I stopped Zoo. I stopped Zoo Man. I told him, man, my name is JJ. I'm on the list. He said, brother, man, I really need to go on stage tonight because if I don't go up tonight, I might not come back. You know, my nerves was ready. I think I had my show was ready. You know, everything, man. I guess he felt it and saw it in my eyes. He said, man, I'm going to do one more. I'm going to let you go up. And he whispered in my ear, he said, man, you got to rock this thing because the crowd getting antsy. They want to see the folks that's in here. So Corey Zumiller went on stage. He said, man, I'm going to do one more open mic. You know how the crowd be like, he was like, oh, I don't want to see nobody. We don't know.
Right.
And everything. So Zoo was like, man, this dude made me believe and feel like we need to put him on stage.
Wow.
And Zoo gave me that opportunity. So I went on stage, and my first line on stage, I'll never forget it. I told the crowd, I said, I know y'all can see it in my face. You probably can hear it in my voice, but I'm nervous as hell. Crowd gave me, they clapped, gave me the motivation and everything, did well. Standing ovation my very first night.
What'd you close with?
I had this joke that I talk about the difference between white college bands and black college bands.
Okay.
So I used to, because I was in the band at Alcorn, of course, played the trumpet. So I went to a historical black university. So I was in the band. So I was one of the ones that was be jamming on in the band and everything, man. So I used to do the difference between the, you know, the white schools and the black schools, and got a standing ovation, man. And I stayed with it. Mm. Here I am today.
I always ask comics on here one of their epic boo stories or one of their epic bombs. Like, what is one you've had in your career?
My epic bomb definitely came from the 559. Definitely came for the 559. And Mike Epps was the host that night.
Oh, man.
Mike Epps was the host that particular night because Bruce was on the road doing some things, man. And, man, that crowd let me have it. Let me have it. I mean, I just wasn't ready.
Right.
I just be real. I just wasn't ready at that particular moment. But I told him, I said, you know, I'm not scared of y'all. I'm coming back.
Yeah.
I'm coming back. So I came back probably the next two Tuesdays and rocked and everything, man. You know, that was a real tough crowd, man. I felt like, man, if I can make it here at 559, I should be able to, you know, perform in front of anybody.
I think that's an important note for comics, too, is like you opened up your first show with like, hey, here's the reality, I'm nervous. That established like a connection
with the crowd in there. That established a connection because they felt like you were one of them and everything, man. So they appreciate my honesty to let them know that, hey, I'm nervous. I'm nervous. My voice is cracking, but I'm here. I'm here to try to entertain y'all, man. And I did well that particular night, man. And luckily, Earthquake saw me. Earthquake kept bringing me back, let me host, some shows during the weekends. Just kept giving me a chance to polish my show and everything. And I'll never forget, Earthquake used to always bring me on stage while the crowd was coming in. He'll start the show before even people were sitting down. And I never understood it at first. I used to always say, man, maybe Earthquake don't like me. Maybe Earthquake he don't really care for me to be on stage and everything, man. But when time, came passed along, he let me realize, he's like, man, this is just a way of me showing, you know, this is a way you're going to have to, you know, entertain the crowd. Mm-hmm. You never know. You got to be able to entertain the crowd while they coming in, while folks are ordering their drinks and their food, when they not paying attention at the time. So, you know, it just helped me get my stage presence and my establish my, you know, my, you know, just my style on stage and everything. So, it panned out. I get it now. I understand it.
Yeah, your comfort on stage. I remember the first time I saw you, you were hosting like a Maurice Sims show here in Atlanta.
Okay.
And I was watching you. I was like, who is this guy and how is he so comfortable?
Comfortable on stage. Yeah, I get that a lot. Man, you know, this is our job training. You know, you got to hit the open mics. You got to hit the stages, you know, different nights, man. You know, and just work on your craft, man. You know, that's the only way you're going to be in advance. Just like your job, man, you got to continue to work, you know, build a relationship with the crowd and just continue to pause your set, man. You know, and it just panned out for me.
Yeah, because your connection with the crowd, I would say, is what's been a driver for you to not only host for, like, SED, but you've hosted festivals and different tours and
absolutely,
concerts.
Absolutely.
It's what tips do you have for comedians on how they can connect with the audience?
I basically just tell them the same thing that I did, you know, just continue to get on stage, man, work on your craft, work on your time, and work on your stage presence. I mean, just continue to, you know, wherever microphone is. Mm. You know, I mean, it could be a karaoke. It can be, a poetry night or anything. Wherever mic is, man, just get on stage and try to, you know, get the crowd to, enjoy what you are doing. Bring them into your world and then establish your craft that way.
So the more connected you are to your material, maybe the more connected the audience will be to what you're saying.
Yes, absolutely. Because I try to give the crowd something to where they could actually paint the picture of what I'm talking about. You know how, you know, like in cartoons or cartoon magazine or something like that, they got the little cloud and they got the little words in there and, you know, they paint pictures. That's how I try to
I visualize myself when I'm telling my jokes. I'm trying to get the crowd to visualize and understand what I'm seeing, what I'm saying, and they see it. Mm-hmm. Once I get them to see what I'm saying, you know, they're in tune to what I'm doing, and they enjoy my craft that way.
I noticed that watching you tonight.
Right.
And if we want to go into a specific story, the story of you playing golf with Obama.
Yes, absolutely.
And I did notice just in several of the stories you were saying, I was like I am seeing this. Like,
yes.
I'm seeing what you're talking about.
Talking about, yeah.
How do you do it?
You know, just, you know, years of practice.
Right,
years of grinding. Years of preparation, man. You know, just trying to establish, you know, my craft and bring them into my world.
So when you're saying, like, a younger comic may be like, oh, I went and played golf with Barack Obama, and then they're like, and they make a joke about his swing or something.
Right,
you're
right.
Able to tell this story that's true and almost like step by step.
Step, right.
What is the secret, or what is the structure of storytelling to where you can just be like, this has happened, and then this would happen next, and that's what happened after that? Is it like details? What do you make sure a story
has? There's details. I mean, you know, I try to talk about real life experiences, like that was a real life experience.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, just the being in that moment of being around Barack Obama, man, you know, even though I wasn't trying to write a joke about him at that particular time, but I was really in tune to the fact that how we was interacting with one another and talking and watching his mannerism on the golf course and watching him talk and cuss when he made a bad shot. But trust me, he was out there cussing. He was out there cussing, man, because, golf make you get mad quick and everything. So, you know, man, and then I just brought that experience on stage, and, you know, I worked it out. Like I said, wasn't really trying to be a joke and everything, man. I was just letting people know, man, what it was an honor to play with our 44th president, and it just happened to end up being funny.
So you started out developing that story by just going on stage?
Going on stage. That's the only way you, for especially for me, I think for all comics, man, you know, you can write out your joke all you want, and you can try it all in the mirror at home all you want, but until you get on that stage and have that mic in front of you, that's the only way you're going to be able to work out. You got to work out the kinks. You got to see what goes where. Should I put this right here? No, I'm going to take this out, put it up front, then put this front part up here. You know, just keep juggling it. You know, once you do a joke, man, you may do it that one time, that particular night, man, but it's still not, you know, at its potential. Still keep working it out, man. Keep still working it out until you just get a flow that you feel is comfortable enough for you to make the crowd visualize what you're doing.
A flow. That's interesting.
Yeah.
You say it, a flow. There's almost like a rhythm to the way.
Yeah, it's a rhythm, especially for me. You know, every comic is different.
Right.
It's a flow. It's a rhythm for me, you know. I don't just go up there and just say, I'm going to do this right here. Because, I mean, once you get on that stage, you got that mic and the mic, you got them lights on, you got all those eyes on you. You know, some things may change. You know, every crowd is different.
Mm-hmm.
Every crowd is different. Every situation is going to be different. I mean, you have some crowds, man, they come in to laugh and listen and ready to be entertained. And you have some crowds that may, you know, have issues and problems, and they're not ready to laugh, or they may be talking through your set and everything, and that could possibly throw you off. So, you know, every crowd going to be different. Every show is going to be different, man. You know, it's just all about the timing and the reps that you do on stage.
Yeah, your pace on stage as well, in terms of, like, how methodic you are with just how you're talking. Is there something to, like, the silence? Because as a comedian, you know, I'm a little over 9 years in,
okay,
and I'm just now starting to, like, hear the silence and being like, oh, you can use the silence.
Yeah, you can use the silence. Lean into it. You can use the silence because, I mean, once you got you feel like you got the crowd in tune in what you're doing, that makes you feel like they in your world.
Mm-hmm.
They opening up their minds and everything where they want to just listen and picture what you're talking about. So you don't have to be. I used when I first went on stage.
Yeah.
When I first started, that's all you want. You just want to punch him in the mouth, and then you know, good night. But now you know I'm seasoned. I got a lot of years into the game, man. So now I know how to flow. I know how to you know scratch a joke out, take my time, and you know just be patient and just let it ride.
That's what I noticed. Yeah. Is the patience.
Yeah.
And like,
yeah. Absolutely.
Someone may tell one story of like, I met Barack Obama and it's like 2 minutes, but you can turn that 2 minutes into like six.
7 minutes quick. Yeah. Like my intro, the song that I do in the intro, man, from the Tila, man, you know, it's amazing. I never thought that would just go the way it is. I mean, it went viral. I've been doing it for a few years now. Some folks be like, man, I don't want to hear that joke no more. But, man, I can't get rid of it. Man, they get mad at me, Joey, when they be like, man, why you ain't do the bass guitar? Like, man, and people keep telling me, even veteran comics, like, man, you can't never get rid of that.
Wow.
That's one of the coldest opening intros of all time. That's what I get all the time.
Mm-hmm.
People be like, man, you got the coldest intro. One of the coldest intros. They say me and JB Smooth may have the top intros of all time. I don't know what JB Smooth intro was back in the day, but they say he had a killer intro as well. And people just love me for that, man. Even people that was out there, man, tonight,
They
like, man, you please do the bass guitar joke, man. Mm-hmm. And you know what, man? Like I say, that joke went so viral that the people, like the rappers, like 8-Ball, MJG, and Tila, they found out. Like Tila, whose song it really is. It's Tila featuring 8-Ball MJG. Man, Tila hit me on Instagram or something. He's like, man, I heard you rocking my song across the world. He's like, I appreciate it. So man, you know, I met them. I met Jazzy Faye who produced it and came up with the beat.
Man.
I finally got a chance to meet the guy that actually did the bass guitar. I met the whole circle from, you know, who made the song, man. So it's just amazing how viral that song went for me. And that song is so old.
Yeah, it still hits, though.
It still hits.
Yeah.
Because people, after my shows, folks have hit me on Instagram and something, like, man, what was the name of that song you did? I'm like, dude, y'all just don't know. That song ain't just come out. That's mid-90s, easily.
And that just come off you? Did you just randomly do it one night?
I randomly did it at Uptown. With DJ Ant Love.
Oh, yeah.
With Ant Love, you know, Ant Love is the master on the turntables, yep. Man. And, man, we just rocked that thing, and it hit so well. Here it is today, man.
And you can call it back at any time.
I can call it back at any time. Mm-hmm. The DJs be ready. I mean, DJs, they'll get so into it and feel it. They'll even do it inside of my set when I don't even ask for it. But it goes there so perfectly.
Mm-hmm.
It just go there because they get the feel. They know where it will possibly hit. I'll be like, man, yeah, I like that. I want to add it right up in there. So, yeah, man, it went viral.
Sometimes you can see a comedian and be like, oh, they're doing music cues.
Yeah,
yours, like, fits.
It fits, you know, right there. Yeah,
but some people, it's that they have the DJ.
You know, you got those comics, man, that do music all in between they set.
Yeah.
And if the DJ ain't on point, they'll kill their whole show. It will kill their whole show. So thank God I'm not one of those, man, where I just need constantly music or nothing like that. I do it at the beginning and, you know, and entertain the crowd like that with it. After that, I'm straight into material and just try to come up with some things off the dome.
The first show flew by watching you tonight.
Oh, yeah, it did.
It's just...
Yeah, it just flows. So, hey, I like, damn, I just got up here. They gave me the light already. But that's just how in tune I was and what I was doing. The crowd was in tune, man. They seemed like they had a great time.
I don't know, because I hadn't seen you in a couple of years. I knew... You've always been one of my favorites, and I saw you again, and I had to come back here and be like, dude, you almost ruined comedy. I was like, man, I haven't even begun to do comedy yet. What are some tips you have for comedians out here on the grind that it's like part of the process, and like things you learn the hard way, either on stage or off? Like, What are some tips that you always go to for comics?
Man, for comics, I mean, when folks come to me for advice, because now the exposure is not like it used to be. You know, Def Jam has winded down. BET Comedy View has truly winded down some, man. So we don't have those outlets of putting your material on TV like they used to. Like, I was blessed. I caught, like, the last tale of Def Jam back in the day and the last little tale of Comic View. But I was able to establish myself in front of comedians that was already established, and they helped me, you know. Ricky Smiling took me on the road plenty of times early in my career. Earthquake helped me polish and gave me that beast into the comedy game, because I was his opening act, so I got a chance to just sit and watch and take in how he rocks a show and his stage presence and how he flows into the crowd.
How does he rock a show? What do you mean,
man,
by that?
Oh, man, when I say rock a show, I mean he hitting you in your side.
Oh, he's just relentless.
He's just relentless. He don't give you a chance to breathe or nothing like that, man. So he taught me how to be that gorilla on stage.
Ooh, okay.
And then I was lucky enough, man, after the Kings of Comedy tour ended, everybody did their little separate thing and went individual and everything. I was blessed to do some shows in Cedric Entertainer's hometown, St. Louis, Missouri.
Mm-hmm.
And his management team came to a couple of shows that I did at small venues, and they enjoyed me, and they pulled me to the side like, hey, man, you a funny dude. I want you to come work with Cedric, the Entertainer. I'm like, what? Yeah. Wow. So that was a beautiful, you know, experience right there. And, you know, I did at least 12 years with Cedric.
Oh, yeah.
Being his opening act, man. And he taught me a lot about the business.
Tell us it all.
How to be smooth on stage, how to appeal to everybody, every gender, every age, how to flow, how to be smooth on stage. Then he taught me how to interview, how to negotiate your contract, your meeting and having meetings and what to talk about and what to ask, what type of questions to ask. So he said it helped me go to another level, because he gave me a chance to entertain, do my show in front of his crowd and build my brand in that way.
How do you negotiate?
I mean, it just depends, you know, who you're talking to, what you're trying to negotiate, man. You know, you just try to stay firm.
Okay.
You know, you tell them what your ideal and your plan is, what your goals are set to be in this business and everything, man. And, you know, and y'all both just try to, you know, be smooth and just comprehend in that way.
So it's important on the business side, if you want to deal in business, first have a clear vision on what you want your business
absolutely.
To be.
Yeah, absolutely. You got to have a vision of what you're trying to do in this business, man, because everybody's path is so different. Like I say, I've been doing stand-up 24 years. You know, sometimes it may take a person 8-9 years, and sometimes it may take a person 20 years. A prime example was Bernie Mac. Bernie Mac had been doing stand-up since the 70s.
Yeah.
I mean, but he didn't really get his break until pretty much, you know, Def Jam. We knew who he was, but then when the Kings of Comedy came around, he took it to a whole nother level.
Mm-hmm.
And then he got his show. You know, because his style was different. Everybody was scared to give him an opportunity. So, you know, the same way with me, you know, I'm very Southern. I have a very strong Southern accent, and people recognize that, but they love it. It's different. There's not a lot of people doing it and everything, man. So everybody love my Southern twang. So I think that's going to truly be a outlet for me to take my career to another level.
Did you find when you started out in comedy, you weren't as Southern on stage, and as you got more comfortable, you kind of became more into your true voice?
I think
voice?
So. I came into my true voice. I came into my own. I was able to be comfortable enough to show people who I am and my background and
boom,
what I stand for, and just believe in what I was doing, and be like, hey, I'm not gonna change. Y'all, I'm going to make y'all change and love me
boom,
for what I do.
Boom.
You know, Everybody jump shot ain't like Kevin Durant.
Mm-hmm.
But damn it, you know, Westbrook's shot might be ugly, but it works for him.
Yeah.
You know, so everybody's path is different. Everybody's style is different. You know, you just got to find your own lane and just stay in there, man, and just pray that you don't see no dead ends or no outlets that's going to hold and hinder you back.
All right. Well, I think I hear your feature on stage, yeah, maybe. So absolutely. we're gonna wrap this up.
Okay.
Before we get out of here, is there anything else you want the world to know?
Man, just make sure you follow your boy. Listen out for me. I'm JJ from the SIP, one of the best kept secrets in stand-up comedy.
Facts.
Man, make sure you follow me. JJ from the SIP on Instagram and Twitter. Comedian JJ Williamson is on Facebook. My website is IamJJWilliamson.com. And just look out for me. Trust me, I'll be in the city near you real soon.
And I tell you what, could you do us a hot breath favor and look into the camera, let them know your name and why the comics should listen to the Hot Breath Podcast.
I'm JJ Williamson, a.k.a. JJ from the SIP. And you need to check out Hot Breath Podcast because this is one of the coldest podcasts in the country. Not just in the South, not just in the ATL. One of the dopest, and you got one of the dopest hosts of this podcast, my man Joe Bob, man. I appreciate you having me, man.
JJ,
number love, man.
It's my honor,
I always
dude.
Been a fan with you, man. You know, we don't see each other a lot, man,
right.
But I love to watch you work as well, man.
Man, I
absolutely,
appreciate
absolutely,
that.
Absolutely, absolutely.
All the great success, my man.
Hey, man, thank you, man, very much.
Got that fire.
Yeah, that's dope, man. Appreciate it, man. Yeah, that was dope, man. That was dope, man.
Thank you so much for listening, Hot Breathiverse. If you enjoyed this Hot Breathisode, please quickly leave a 5-star review on our iTunes page. Share this episode with friends and fellow comedians. And reach out to our guests directly. Let them know their time on Hot Breath was very well received and that you learned a lot. If you'd like to support the show, because this is a one-man production, so the more support we get, the more we can bring you, head on over to our website, hotbreathpodcast.com. On there, you can get information about how you yourself can become a sponsor of the show. You can also pick up some merch and check out our blog that covers past episodes and our podcasting equipment and just a lot of fun additional content. More additional content, if you like these audio versions, you will love the video. We have our own YouTube page. Just go on youtube.com/hotbreathpod. Subscribe, watch these episodes with your own eyes, and see our guests in their full form. If you want to learn more about me and my classes here, I teach classes in Atlanta, but also online courses, and I do Skype sessions with people. Head on over to joelbyerscomedy.com. It's a great place you can get more information about my performance schedule and how you can book me to come to your town. And finally, if you want to engage with fellow listeners, head on over to our Facebook community. Go on Facebook, search Hot Breath Comedy Network, request to join, and there's a whole slew of us in there from around the world sharing all of our favorite episodes and also comedy insights, and it's just a great place to connect with like-minded people. So all that being said, thank you so much for listening. I thank, at the end of all of my episodes, my wife for making the theme song of Hot Breath Podcast. And until next Monday, right here on Hot Breath. This episode of Hot Breath is sponsored by our Patreon. If any of our content has helped your comedy career, join our Patreon linked in the show notes and get positive comedy karma for life. Probably.